looking to throw over the middle and into the end zone. Touchdown, Arizona State.
We support each other's teams the rest of the year, but during this game, all bets are off.
That was all Keaton Slovis. Wow, what a play by him.
One man to beat, 15-10-5. Touchdown, a new NCAA record. Dante Pettis.
Washington State has found a way to move the ball. It's incredible what we're seeing here in Pullman tonight.
Touchdown, Oregon. They fake the handoff. Justin Herbert delivers a dart.
I went to HR several times about how the Duck fans treat me.
Touchdown, Utah.
I mean, this is the Pac-12 we're talking about. Week 3 of Pac-12 football is upon us, and so far, we have almost a full slate of games ready to go. Will it stay the same? Well, we're going to find out all together come Saturday, but for now, we have a whole bunch to preview. Welcome, everybody, to Believe in the Pac-12 on the Believe Podcast Network, along with college football analyst Ryan Leaf. My name is Jonathan Rifkin. Delighted to be with you, no matter how you're listening or where you're listening. All of us here at Believe appreciate you making us a part of your podcast listening plans. If you missed Tuesday's episode, Adam Rittenberg joined the show. Still very prevalent conversation, really surrounding the Pac-12. Definitely go back, check that out. Ryan, you've been making the rounds this week. I saw you on Greg McElroy's show. I saw you on the Stanford football podcast. I mean, you've been busy this week.
Well, you know, I was hibernating until the Pac-12 came back and then get the opportunity to, you know, talk what we know. And it helps that Washington State plays against Stanford this weekend. So there's some inside baseball there. And, you know, Greg McElroy is a good friend of mine. He's going to little teaser here. But I think Greg McElroy is going to join us next Monday to recap our weekend as well.
Very good foreshadowing. Hopefully, everybody, that piece of information gets you through the weekend. Before we get to the slate of games, two big things coming out of the conference. Number one, is Colorado-Arizona State getting canceled? Number two was that the conference contingent with some contingencies approved non-conference games to be played if any of these programs have games that are scheduled. Now, Ryan, let's start with that. What was your interpretation of this vote, and do you think that it'll actually manifest over the course of the season?
Well, if a team loses a game like Colorado this weekend, and they want a chance to make it up, and so they have an equal number of games. They're 2-0 right now, so they have every bit of good a chance as USC or Oregon to win the conference championship. And if you're not able to play in the conference championship because of a limited amount of games, you know, what can you do to try to make up that difference? And at first it was the athletic directors, and then the presidents and chancellors had to okay it. They have. Of course, the contingencies you talked about are the schools that they have to look at have to have the same kind of testing protocols as the Pac-12, and therefore they can make that happen. And we saw pretty quickly a week ago that a game can be scheduled and put into play within 36 hours, as Cal and UCLA did on Sunday morning. So what Colorado's doing right now and has a great opportunity to schedule a Colorado State team that lost out as their opponent had to postpone. Wyoming, which is just a state away, had to cancel their game with Utah State, so they're available as well. Colorado made a statement saying that we're going to wait until we see if any Pac-12 opponents are available, that meaning like a week ago or 2 weeks ago when two games were canceled. There may be another opponent, a viable opponent for them to play in the conference to have a Power 5 opponent. And if they can't, if the games seem like they're going to go off without a hitch come Friday night, you may see a contest set up for, let's say, Sunday morning between the likes of Colorado and Colorado State, a rivalry game that they normally play every year. And now we'll get a chance to do it in this pandemic shortened season.
And of course, last week, Arizona State already had a game canceled. So far, 0-1 for the Sun Devils. And it looks like that'll remain as they are just uproaring. They're looking like what Utah looked like in the first 2 weeks of Pac-12 play. And it looks like the Utes are going to be able to play. Now, we won't get definitive word until the USC plane obviously touches down out in Salt Lake City. Everybody gets to Rice-Eckley Stadium, and the tests go through on Saturday. But Utah, the final of the 127 FBS programs to yet or active programs yet to have played, finally getting a chance to take the field. That's the 7:30 game. Let's rewind here to the early games, Ryan. There was a conversation between ESPN and the Pac-12 about how they wanted to schedule this Oregon-UCLA game. This was a late 12:30 announcement. They wanted to stick him in the Pac-12 after dark slot on Fox, but the Pac-12 lobbied for a better slot because the Cincinnati game got canceled. That ESPN2 spot opened up, and now Oregon-UCLA is in a much better position on ESPN2 at 12:30. The problem is I don't know how many eyeballs are going to be on this game because Oregon is probably going to take it to UCLA, and I'm not exactly intrigued if I'm not a fan of the conference or one of these teams to go and watch this game compared to the rest of the slate that we're going to see around the country. What's your takeaway from this game?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think that UCLA's dynamic offense applies pressure to a defense that's trying to find its identity. They struggled out the gate in both the Stanford and Washington State game. So I expect this game to be much closer. 17 points is a lot of points. I think Oregon wins this game. I think they win it by double digits. I do. But what we need from Oregon, if they plan on contending in the college football playoff, because as of right now, I haven't seen a team in the Pac-12 capable of competing in the college football playoff. If they are to do so, they have to be as physical as they were late in the fourth quarter. They have to get the matchups they want. They have to use the speed that they have and get away from people. And UCLA actually has speed on offense, speed on defense. What they did to Cal a week ago was really impressive on defense. So I'm going to go with Oregon, but I'm going to take UCLA plus 17 points. I think the final here is 35-21 in terms of final score.
I'm with you. I think what we're going to see largely from UCLA offensively is some of what we saw at Washington State last week, with just solid quarterback play. The thing about DTR is that he reminds me of sort of a tier two version of Jameis. He's a dynamic but reckless quarterback in a system where he kind of just gets to run awry with Chip Kelly and that playbook. But that's what they have to do. That's what UCLA has to do. The over under is 64. I think I actually have it at 63. I have Oregon 42, UCLA 21. So I have the plus 17. I have them by three scores. You have the minus, excuse me, I have the minus 17. You have the plus 17. I'm going to keep these by hand so that way we can make sure that the winner is indeed the winner in these odds. Okay, so I'm with you. Also, shout out quickly to the University of Oregon, my alma mater, the first ever university to have three players drafted in the first round in the NBA draft, the WNBA draft, and the NFL draft. Of course, Marcus Mariota, Sabrina Ionescu, and last night, my boy Peyton Pritchard getting drafted by my team, the Boston Celtics. It's going to be a lot of fun. So shout out to the Oregon Ducks and, of course, Nike University for making sure they can go get all these great players to eventually go become number one or first round picks in their respective sports. The other 12:30 game, Ryan, as we move along here, Oregon State hosting Cal, lackluster defense last week from Justin Wilcox's team, but scheduling conflicts, last minute trip to LA. Obviously, the first two games were canceled. I think that the situation really harmed the team more than the actual the players on the field. What's your interpretation of this game?
Yeah, well, UCLA was in the same situation. So, I mean, nothing was different. They were, you know, Cal was having to go to Arizona State. They were going to have to travel anyway. UCLA was in the same scenario. Only difference is they had played a game. And I think that was monumentally more. Chase Garbers looked labored. He looked like he wasn't using his body. His fundamentals were bad. And I wonder how much practice he's gotten over the last year. What has he been able to do with the receivers that they have? Because it doesn't look like he's made any advancements in throwing the football. He looked like he struggled a lot Sunday morning. So they're going to have to do something different against an Oregon State team that, frankly, had a good chance of beating Washington State and had an even better chance of beating Washington, if not for a couple bad calls by the review committee on where a ball was spotted. So could have been a lot different. I am, you know, it's at home. Three games, third game for Oregon State. I feel like they can get it done. It's a 3.5 points. I think if Cal were to win it, they'd win it on the last second field goal. I do not think that they are going to get anything done in particular. 2 years ago, Oregon State ran roughshod over Cal up in Corvallis last time they were up there. So I'm going to go Oregon State here plus 3.5.
Yeah, I have the same. This game, it's Oregon State's to win. I just think it is. I think you're right. I think that they got robbed of an opportunity to win last week by a Pac-12 crew that we have seen make mistakes in the past, and obviously the lack of cameras. We can go into all of that. It doesn't matter. I have a question for you regarding Garbers and the conditioning that a quarterback, maybe a quarterback like him who needs a little bit more fundamental conditioning, how important is it leading up to the season? Because these guys had a limited amount of that, and especially when your program is shut down after you're supposed to be back and practicing at in a capacity at full speed. How important is it? Because there are defensive players. Kayvon Thibodeau is my perfect example. He looked labored the first 2 weeks for Oregon because I don't think that they got the conditioning that they really needed, and now they're getting it in season. How important is that for a quarterback at this stage?
Well, incredibly important, right? And you can do those things on your own throwing the football. You really can. It's just a matter of, you know, your work ethic. And I think Chase Garbers has probably one of the best work ethics out there. But we are in absolutely unprecedented times. We have no idea how to go about things. And the Bay Area was really shut down. And there was a lot to the quarantine up there and inability to go and do things and stuff like that. So maybe we'll see something different. Maybe the new offensive system, Bill Musgrave's system, has given him fits because he just hasn't had enough of an opportunity to learn how to throw in it. You know, that's what happens when you get a new offensive coordinator before a pandemic hits and you don't ever get to really spend any time with them, but learn and install an offense virtually with the rest of your group. I mean, DTR and that crew have been playing with Chip Kelly's offense for 3 years. So that's meaningful. And I said that in our first show that I felt like any of the continuity of programs where there were coaches and quarterbacks that had been together for a long period of time or had more than 1 year, we're going to be more successful. Now, Washington State's throwing that in the face of me and everybody else because they're doing it with the new head coach and a true freshman quarterback through this process. And they look pretty darn good doing it.
They did. And Oregon, of course, with the new offensive coordinator and a new quarterback also. I mean, they looked a little bit sloppy in the RPO last week, but the play calling seems a lot better, and Tyler Shuck is settling in that offense. So I'm with you. I agree with Rolovich and Delora. We'll get to that game here in just a moment. But before that, at 5 o'clock on Fox, Washington, Arizona. This is an intriguing game for me. I wasn't impressed with Washington's offense last week. I know that they're starting a freshman. Jonathan Lake came out and said that he was actually very happy with the performance of his offense. Even though they really, again, there was a few opportunities to Oregon State to win this game. Arizona showed some signs against USC last week. I don't think they're going to be as bad as we anticipated them being. But again, a younger team, Kevin Sumlin has consistently struggled defensively. I still think Washington will find a way to pull this out, but I don't think it'll be by the 11 projected points.
Yeah, I you know, starting a freshman quarterback. Now, he was a redshirt freshman, okay? So he's been in the system. It's a new offensive coordinator, of course, so he had to learn a new system as well. But what does Washington do well? They run the football with McGrew, and they have a great offensive line, and they're physical. And that's exactly what they did. They didn't ask Dylan Morris to do a ton. My biggest concern about this is – in a what I would consider developmental year, 6-7 games, if you're not in the college football playoff conversation, what is it really? It's a developmental season. And I think it would be a wasted season if the starting quarterback in 2021 isn't the guy playing this year. Now, if Sam Heward is the guy, then I can understand it. It comes in as a true freshman. But Ethan Garbers, you know, that's a scenario where what they're seeing in having Dylan Morris actually be the quarterback, if he's not the starter a year from now, and it's one of the guys that are on the roster right now, I'd have to say it was a wasted season that they didn't find their guy, because they have a stable full of quarterbacks that Chris Peterson and this staff have put together over the last 5 years since Jake Browning got on that role and started four consecutive seasons. Jacob Eason came in for a stalemate. They lost Jacob Hayner, who looks like a pretty damn good one down in Fresno right now. He's ripping people apart. They better find their guy. And I thought they did a good job of protecting Dylan Morris last week. They ran the ball well defensively. They gave the stops they needed to. I think Oregon State's a better team than people expect. You'd like to see them get some of these wins that are in tight ball games, but it is what it is. I think we'll see a much more balanced Washington team. And if not, the defense for Arizona looked bad. And USC just pretty much walked over them late in the games. I mean, I don't know if it was you as well as me, but I remember when Arizona scored that touchdown, I said to myself, they scored too quick because their defense wasn't stopping anything. So I think Washington wins this game too. I think 11 points is a lot from an Arizona team that can put some points up. So I'm going to go Arizona plus the 11. Washington gets a win here, but doesn't cover.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. We'll see what happens with Grant Gunnell. I actually think that, you made the comparison that he has signs of Phillip Rivers, or he has a play style like Phillip Rivers. Would you care to elaborate?
Just his throwing style. It's kind of a push throw, kind of like Phillip does. Just so happened, I didn't realize it until about midway through the third quarter that they wear the same number. He wears 17 as well. Much more mobile than Phillip is, but it's kind of a push throw, and it's accurate. And he's got some heft to it. He can throw it down the football field. So, that's the comparison I saw when I looked at it for the first time in his throwing motion. And it looks unorthodox, but it gets it done. And he didn't look labored at all, like Keaton Slovis did that whole game until the last drive, it seemed like.
Yeah, 286 passing yards, 3 touchdowns for Gunnell against USC last week in his first meaningful start as an Arizona Wildcat. Of course, he got a few starts for Khalil Tate last year when he went down with that injury. All right, 1-7-30 game this weekend out of the Pac-12, and that is your Washington State Cougars against the Stanford Cardinal. Stanford Cardinal team that almost came back against Colorado, ended up dropping it at the end of the game. You predicted that outcome. They look terrible against USC. We won't even go into the offense without David Mills, but defensively, it just has not looked like a David Shaw defense. They're not disciplined. It's pretty loose. They're playing off of receivers. If Stanford plays this way, there's no reason for Washington State not to win and not to win convincingly.
Well, I don't know about convincingly, because Washington State's defense proved that they had some holes in it in terms of matchups and speed. And that was one of the big things. And I'm assuming defensive coordinator Coach Dickert is really going to take a look at making sure he doesn't get put in vulnerable positions again where they have matchup mistakes, especially late in the ball game. But you're exactly right. Davis Mills only had one day of practice, and I felt like he started to feel his rhythm in the second half and really kind of come to life. And we saw more of what we saw a year ago in Davis Mills in that second half. So I expect him, after a full week of practice, to certainly be more ready. But I think Washington State is able to stick with them, point for point. And I think it comes down to the kicker. And Mazza has been a better kicker than Toner this year. Toner did come back and make all his kicks this last week, but I think it comes down to that. And I think Washington State finds a way to win another game on the road, and Rolovich goes to 2-1. So I got Washington State plus the 2. And Stanford goes to 0-3, and this could be another year where Stanford doesn't get above 500. If they're 3-3 with 3 games to go, who knows? They still got to play the likes of Washington. I don't know who is their. Do you know who their crossover game is this year?
I have the schedule handy.
It was Colorado, and they got it was Colorado, and they got beat. So yep. It's not shaping up for David Shaw, but I think everybody understands that this needs to be a developmental year. They better develop Davis Mills into a elite quarterback in this conference at the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. First of all, I have Wazoo plus 2. I have them like 38-40 to 32. I think they'll put up some points. I like Renard Bell as a primary option for Jaden Delora. And It's tough. I actually like Stanford. I've always liked Stanford as a program. It was fun to root against them when they were always good. Whenever they would match up with Notre Dame, and then when I grew up a USC fan, seeing how that would play out and try to predict what happens with USC Stanford, which was always early, and then USC Notre Dame at the end of the season. Stanford was always a revolving door. It's tough to see, and David Shaw is such a great guy. But unfortunately, another year for Stanford looks like where they're going to be somewhere at the bottom of the North, maybe the Pac-12 in general. All right, so let's go over these really quickly. You have the
final game.
Did we miss a game? Did I miss a game?
USC Utah,
the most important game of the day. Thank you for that, Ryan Leaf. Not only expert college football analyst, but he's also keeping me on task here. All right, Utah hasn't played the one, as I mentioned to open the show, the only of the 127 active FBS programs to not have played a game of football yet this season. I don't know what to make of Utah replacing a lot of big pieces. They had a good recruiting class. I like what Kyle Whittingham does, typically elevating the talent on his team. I think USC, though, at this point, with two games under their belt, with unconvincing wins, even though it's in Utah, based on all the circumstances, there's no reason that SC probably doesn't win this game. But I think that, again, will be unconvincing. So maybe a touchdown, maybe 10 points.
Well, this game is at night. It's cold. USC has not won there since 2012. So it's been 8 years since they were able to go to Rice-Eccles Stadium and figure out a way to get the win. Utah is a physical football team. USC is no longer a physical football team. The air raid has knocked that wind out of them. And we saw it last week in short yardage situations. They looked very much like a Mike Leach-led offense at Washington State over the last decade, where they got into situations where they needed to get a first down on third and one or fourth and one, couldn't do it. Because these offensive linemen spend their entire game, the entire season, the entire practice, going backwards, dropping back in pass protection. They're asked to go forward. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to do it. Also, They sit their quarterback in the shotgun, the running back at 9 yards back when it's third or fourth and one. It's the most asinine thing I can think of from an offensive coordinator standpoint. Utah is going to be a physical team on a cold night. Their bodies are fresh. They haven't played. I think that can be a positive as well as a negative in that they don't know what they have at the quarterback position. They don't know what they have on that revamped defense that lost so much talent to the NFL. How are they going to replace Tyler Huntley? How are they going to replace Zach Moss? They got some great tight end play and wide receivers. We'll see what quarterback they go with. If they go with the young freshman and Cam Rising, or if they go with the fifth-year senior and Jake Bentley, we'll find out Saturday. I think USC continues to find a ways to get it done like they had the last couple of weeks. It may not look pretty, but I think they find a way to win 3 points. I'm going to go with that. I think they win, you know – or a push, you know, 24-21, or they win by a touchdown, 24-17, something like that. So I'm gonna go USC minus the 3 right now. I think they go to 3-0, continue the matchup pathway to the matchup for the Pac-12 championship with two undefeated teams. That would be great for Oregon. I think Oregon's the best team. The best chance they have is to maybe get a COVID lost game where they don't play Oregon State or they don't play Cal in the next 2 weeks because they could schedule BYU. And I think BYU would be stupid to do this because they're essentially giving up a New Year's Six bowl bid and just having their season kind of just become an also-ran and go to the Armed Services Bowl or something like that if they were to play Oregon. But Oregon needs it because BYU is going to be in the top 10 in the first college football rankings a week next Tuesday night. So that would be the best thing for Oregon to get a chance to be the top 10 team and then hope USC, who is at 20 right now, goes undefeated and maybe gets vaulted up to somewhere around the top 10 so they have a top 15 win for them at 7-0. That would be the only way I think they even get any kind of consideration to the college football playoff.
Yeah, this morning I was on a Steve Tannen show up in CBS Portland, a host that I know you know. You've been on his show before, and he asked me sort of the South, that sort of same scenario, and I said, if you're an Oregon fan, if you're hoping that Oregon gets in the college football playoff, you're a USC fan and you want style points, and you need USC by all intents and purposes to go and kick the asses off these teams week in and week out at this point, because so far there has been not a convincing win in the first 2 weeks for USC. Quickly on Utah, you mentioned only two freshman starters right now on the depth chart. That's Nate Ritchie at the free safety and Clark Phillips the third at cornerback. Clark Phillips the third is the highest recruit ever for Utah. He was a four-star. He was the third highest cornerback in the nation. He's supposed to go to Ohio State, and Kyle Whittingham was able to flip him to Utah. I'm excited to see him go against Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think that's going to be a fun matchup to keep an eye on. But that defense overall, you're right, outside of seven returners, there's a lot. I mean, freshmen all over the second part of the depth chart. If they're facing 60 Keaton Slovis passes, they're going to need a rotation of players. And I just don't think that the freshman core as the second unit is going to get the job done. And offensively, like you said, Jake Bentley, there's Drew Lisk also, Cameron Rising, who's the transfer. So you don't think Drew Lisk even has a shot in this?
I talked to a couple of my sources there at Utah, and he's if they weren't confirming anything other than Drew Lisk is out of the conversation.
Okay.
So
yeah, Jake Bentley and Cameron Rising are the two predictors there. All right, so let's go over these really quickly, and then we have some time. Let's talk some quick national college football. Let's see what games that you, Ryan Leaf, are keeping an eye on across the national slate. And by the way, I heard that JT Daniels is starting at Georgia, folks. It's about time that Kirby Smart gives this guy a chance, because that offense has not been very impressive as of late. All right. Ryan has UCLA plus 17 against Oregon. I have Oregon minus 17. That looks like the only discrepancy that we have this week. We both have the plus 3 Oregon State against Cal, plus 11 UW Arizona, the plus 2 Wazoo over Stanford, and you have a push or the minus 3 USC over Utah. I have the minus 3. I'll give you one or the other if they end up winning by the field goal, or if they win by more than that field goal. So that is the Pac-12 slate of games. 5 games on the docket, no Colorado and no Arizona State. Colorado might be back, but for right now, that game is canceled. We'll see if they can get Wyoming or Colorado State or one of the other Mountain West schools to fill in, because BYU is going to put the hurt on North Alabama this week, and they are not free to play a Pac-12 team. All right, Ryan, there's a decent amount of games. I'm not exactly sure, minus maybe that Ohio State-Indiana game, that have college football playoff implications, but games nonetheless that we should be paying attention. Oh, Wisconsin-Northwestern, I should say. The Big Ten is rolling this week. What are you looking at?
Well, I'm looking at what the committee's going to do after this weekend. Northwestern, if they were able to upset Wisconsin, I wouldn't be surprised if Northwestern is at number 6 or number 5 in the college football initial rankings. Because if you're going to put Texas A&M in there and they have a loss and haven't played anybody else other than a win over Florida, Northwestern needs to be in that conversation. So that should be interesting. The Big 12 is, or the Big 10 is at the forefront of college football this weekend. Indiana in the last 60 years is 256-2 against Ohio State. Those two wins came in back-to-back years, 87 and 88. So it has been miserable. Tom Allen's got his boys believing. He really does. They are 21-point underdogs. It doesn't look like it's not going to be business as usual, and Ohio State's going to run right through them. But if they make a couple mistakes early and Indiana can capitalize, that game could get pretty tidy. I still think Ohio State whoops them. I think that Wisconsin whoops up on Northwestern. I think chalk stays as chalk, and we're talking about, you know, the first round of the college football playoff and whether or not Notre Dame can beat Clemson the second time and knock them out completely. Who knows? But I don't think we're going to see too much. I think Oklahoma State is still involved, and I think people are writing off the Big 12 because of it. Oklahoma State has one loss. They are able to win in Bedlam this week against Oklahoma. That changes the conversation a little bit. They get to stay in that conversation. And if they are a Big 12 champion, and when it's all said and done with one loss, though it's to Texas, I think that there's an argument to be had if some chaos hits. If Texas A&M is there with one loss and Alabama's there with one loss and, you know, Clemson's there with two losses, there's a lot that can go into that. So if Oklahoma State can continue. So I'm pretty keeping an eye on that. I'm keeping an eye on Appalachian State at Coastal Carolina. My old play-by-play partner, Clay Matvick's on the call there, so I'm excited to see that. But more importantly, excited to see how the Pac-12 does because, again, there's going to be about 15, 16 games canceled this weekend, a lot of them in the South. And that allows for games like the Pac-12 games to get a little more attention. So I think this weekend's going to be really all about the Big Ten and the Pac-12, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it sucks that Marshall's game against Charlotte got canceled. Marshall rolling at 7-0. I want to ask you Hugh Freeze's question here. Liberty's 8-0. I know he signed a contract extension this past week. Does he stay at Liberty, or does he get a Power 5 offer somewhere, maybe South Carolina?
Yeah, I think Tennessee is actually one that's going to open up where he really could get a look there. And I wouldn't be surprised. And I also wouldn't be surprised if the Mississippi State people are like, this was the worst decision we made to go with Mike Leach and Hugh Freeze back in the state of Mississippi, where he was one of only two coaches to take down mighty Alabama Nick Saban twice. You know, Gus Malzahn has done it twice to Nick Saban, but Hugh Freeze did it at Mississippi, and boy, was that special. So it reminds me a lot of what Lane Kiffin was at last year at FAU, to sign an extension, saying he loved his guys, would be around forever, and then the next week he took a job at Ole Miss. So, you know, don't pay too much attention into the fact that Hugh Freeze took an extension. Extensions don't mean anything. It's an olive branch of a university to try to say, hey, we love you. This is how much we love you. Please don't leave us.
You mentioned Mississippi State. They opened up the season beating the national champs. They're 2-4 now. They match up against Georgia. JT Daniels gets that start. So two former quarterbacks from the Pac-12. JT Daniels started at USC, obviously, for a season, went down against Fresno State, transferred out of the program when Keaton Slovis ended up being the guy. Mississippi State has KJ Costello, who is only six touchdowns on the season, and five of them came against LSU. I know that he's been in.
Well, he's not playing anymore. They benched him.
Oh, they bench him? Oh, okay.
Yeah. They're terrible. They are very, very bad football team. So, I expect them to get absolutely, you know, clobbered by the likes of Georgia. We'll see what JT Daniels can do. I mean, it wasn't that they didn't want to play him. It's just, they didn't want to rush him back from that knee injury. That's more and more I heard from Kirby Smart, when I talked to him a couple weeks ago, and they must feel comfortable enough now that he's healthy enough to protect himself. And, you know, good game to do it in is against a Mississippi State team that isn't very physical.
Yeah, I mean, again, Pac-12 slate seems way more intriguing than the national college football slate, but the Ohio State-Indiana matchup, like you said, intriguing, and a couple of Wisconsin-Northwestern as well. Man, if Northwestern can pull that off, if you're right, Ryan, about Northwestern being a 5 or 6 out, then good night to the Pac-12, because they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt if Northwestern is up that high against Wisconsin. I know Wisconsin looks good. I know they beat Michigan convincingly, but that stems even worse.
Well,
for the Pac-12.
this is a look that you got to really take it to heart too. Is if Wisconsin wins and they're 3-0, and the committee looks at them and goes, "Oh, we like you," after only having 3 games, that means that they're more about the eye test than they are about data points, which means an Oregon team at 3-0 has every bit of chance to be in the top 10. And I think when this weekend's said and done, when Tuesday comes around, we're going to see an Oregon team in the top 10 when the committee releases its first rankings on Tuesday night.
All right, really quickly, I saw Trevor Lawrence move back to third in the Heisman conversation. As of today, this is Thursday night, nearing 8 o'clock on the West Coast. Who's your Heisman, and what does Grayson McCall have to do to get consideration?
Who's that?
He's the quarterback at Coastal. Oh, everybody's. He's been like the guy. He's been insane.
Never heard of him.
Okay, well, in that case, he has no shot. Ignore that part of the question. Who's your Heisman?
Kyle Trask, by far. He's putting up Joe Burrow numbers. The loss is problematic, but he played really well in that game. I don't see how anybody defensively stops this Florida team until the SEC championship. And then it may be LSU, Alabama all over again from a year ago. Just go. and whoever hits 50 first wins. And that would be a heck of an SEC championship, that's for sure, because what Florida's doing now offensively and what Kyle Trask has done is really, really impressive. It would be unbelievable to see back-to-back Heisman Trophy winners come from out of nowhere, really, to win it. So right now he's the guy. I don't see anybody else, you know, within reach of him right now in terms of what the Heisman Trophy has to offer.
Yeah, Trask currently sitting at 2,100 passing yards, 28 touchdowns in 6 games in the most dominant football conference in the nation. And I think that's the best way to leave it off. Great football coming up this week. As we mentioned, 5 Pac-12 games on the slate. We'll see if Colorado can reschedule. Make sure to look alive on Twitter. I'm sure Ryan will be live tweeting a lot of this stuff. And you're going to want to get all of his insights. And as he alluded to on Monday, perhaps Greg McElroy will join the show as well, get his college football insights. Enjoy Pac-12 football. Enjoy college football. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Believe in the Pac-12 on the Blue Podcast Network.